The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Girl podcast, where we dive into all things art and culture of Palm Beach County. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and I'm here today with a very special guest, Benji Stute. He is a conservationist, a scientist, an artist, photographer, storyteller, so many things. I'm excited to have him here. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's going to be exciting. So we've already kind of chatted a little bit behind the scenes while we made some artwork on our background. So this is what just got added, the cypress tree behind me.
That's right.
So I know you're a big fan of the swamp.
Yes.
We're going to dive into all things that. But first, let's get a little background. Okay.
Sure.
So what brought you to work with Palm Beach County, and how did that kind of like, how did that mission start that you're on now?
Yeah, I've got to start with, you know, summer vacations when I was a kid.
Okay.
Which were all up and down, you know, the Eastern Seaboard and camping with my folks. And my dad is a scientist and my mom's an educator. And so we spent summers in tents up, you know, in the coast of Maine and on the dunes of Lake Michigan. And in the swamps of the Everglades and the Okefenokee and then the Florida Keys.
Okay, so you've been an outdoor guy your whole life.
Yes.
Yes, this is a lifelong love that your parents instilled in you. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I feel most alive. That's where life really happens for me. And so, you know, through that, I knew I wanted to pursue some kind of career in the sciences. After high school, I was lucky enough to get an internship with South Florida Water Management District. Made some relationships there and then got another internship with Palm Beach County ERM, Environmental Resources Management. And that's where I work now.
That's where you are now. Tell us about what that role for you is today.
Yeah, so it's really molded. You know, when I was a student, I was in our artificial reef program. I knew I wanted to get back into ERM, but it's really competitive. Folks tend to get there and stay there because we do such cool work. So the opportunity I got to come back in was in our natural areas section, and that was in 2006. And so I spent 9 years designing and implementing wetland restoration projects, and then also doing some of the biological monitoring, wildlife and plant monitoring, and also prescribed fire were some of the most exciting days, was being out there and putting fire on the land in a safe way that is really regenerative for all of our native habitats here in Florida.
That's amazing. And I know that Firefest just passed, right? But this is that an annual event?
Yeah. So Firefest is at Jonathan Dickinson State Park.
Yep.
And they're wonderful partners of ours. So we help out. This year was actually the first year in several where they didn't get to put fire on the ground. We had winds that were over 30 miles an hour. So we've got to be careful when we're doing these things. But the second opportunity that folks can get to see fire is at our Natural Areas Festival. And that's something we put on in February. It's actually the same day as Artie Gras.
Oh, heck. Okay. That's all right. They can visit me and then they can visit you.
But it's in the afternoon, right? So go to Artie Gras, get your day started, and then come out and do some hikes, some paddles.
Cultural weekend.
Fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So how does the photography that you do? I'm going to call you an artist. I don't know if you call yourself an artist. Are you comfortable with that title?
I mean, sure.
Okay.
If you think it fits.
I do. I've seen your photography is incredible, and the storytelling that goes along with that and how you're, you know, not just expressing the things that you're passionate about, but pulling people in and giving them a vantage point that they might otherwise never have. So when did the photography come into how you work professionally?
Yeah. So I have always been interested in photography. In my 20s, I had a significant fishing addiction. And so, you know, me and my fishing buddy would be out 4 or 5 days a week. But, you know, over time, that kind of morphed into photography. And one of my photography mentors is a guy, his name is Max Stone. And he does incredible work highlighting the Everglades. And he was friends with a lot of my friends at University of Florida. And so my wife saw some of his work in a friend's house when we were up for a Gator game in the mid-aughts.
Go Gators.
Go Gators. And so she saw this photo and she said, we've got to have that for our house. And, you know, we're starving 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
And I look online at the prices and I go, oh, I can take that photo. 5 years later, I could take that photo.
Yeah.
Right. But he really kind of sparked that dive into photography. And so that fishing addiction kind of morphed into photography. And initially it was just like, I want to capture this, you know, amazing scene in nature.
Yeah.
And had all these dreams of being, you know, a fine artist and all this. But then I started to do these outreach events, trying to get kids, young people interested in the outdoors through ERM while I was still restoring, you know, working to restore our wetlands. And so that kind of drove this passion for storytelling and connection. And it just so happened that, you know, a position opened up to lead our outreach and science communication section. I jumped at it because I was really enjoying that storytelling. And so now, you know, I've been at that for almost 10 years. So website, social media, photo stories, videos.
Yeah. Speaking of video, you got to be executive producer on the film Hidden Wild, right? Which is now used as a part of the curriculum for Palm Beach County schools.
Yes.
Tell us about that project.
Such a cool project. For years, we've always been integrated with the school district of Palm Beach County. And for years, we were in this partnership with the Palm Beach Post, which was great at the time. But we were printing newspapers for every fifth and eighth grader in the district. And one of my staff came on board, and she was a former educator. She said, it's 2017. We're spending $10,000 a year to print these newspapers. Why are we giving newspapers to kids in 2017? So we stopped doing it.
Yeah, okay.
And then the next year, the school district called us and said, where's our newspapers? I was like, oh, they're paying attention.
Yeah.
So we knew we needed to do something, but we wanted it to be video, but we didn't want it to be like scientists talking to camera. And I was inspired by another one of my mentors, Carlton Ward. And he, you know, launched the Florida Wildlife Corridor and now runs a nonprofit called Wild Path. He's an amazing conservation photographer. And to highlight Florida nature, he was doing these epic expeditions, 1,000 miles in 70 days, you know? And so I thought, well, let's do that with kids. Let's do that with kids in Palm Beach County. And so we recruited kids that were nominated by their science teachers. And so we got three kids, Noah, Cortez, and Kiana. It's amazing young people. And we went 70 miles in 7 days, hiking, biking, and paddling through the wildest places in Palm Beach County. And they were led by conservation photographer Alex Fries. She's a sixth generation Floridian and now works at Florida Wildlife Corridor. So she was the on-camera lead. I was behind the camera, leading the expedition. And so the story is really one of just connection to where we live, which is the land. And the really cool part about that project was, you know, this is not a low budget little film. You know, it was a $100,000 project at the time. Half of the funding came from our tourism agency, Discover the Palm Beaches.
Amazing.
Because they needed that content to advertise this destination as, you know, an ecotourism destination.
Right. We're not just beaches.
Right.
So much more.
My wife and I travel across the country every year. I always can't wait to come home because there is nowhere else in the world that the blue water is so close to the Everglades than right here.
Yeah.
And so that's what Hidden Wild highlights. And you can watch it now. You can watch it on Palm Beach County ERM's website.
Oh, good. Okay.
So it aired statewide on PBS. And now it is in the school district for 7th and 10th graders as science curriculum. Don't let that scare you. It is not an educational film. It is an adventure film.
Yeah.
So it's 26 minutes. And if you're new here, or you just want to learn a little more about the outdoors, highly recommend it.
What are maybe one or two of the highlights, like features that things that you come across in that film? Is it, you know, a specific natural area or a specific animal that you're experiencing out there?
Yeah. So the itinerary, I mean, it was packed. Yeah. It was nuts to try to keep pace because every day we had a different interaction with a different scientist or conservationist. So
Wow, okay.
Day one, after we biked 16 miles, We met up with Bush Wildlife for a wildlife release. Day two, we met up with Mark Cook, who is a scientist, an avian ecologist, studies birds for South Florida Water Management. He's an amazing photographer too. But he set traps out in the swamp for us, and we actually came across and trapped one of the giant salamanders that live in the swamps.
Wow.
Yes. And it's called a two-toed amphiuma. And there is video of this animal that almost no one knows even exists underwater in the film.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's that. It's paddling next to alligators through the wild and scenic Loxahatchee. The kids ended up shadowing a prescribed fire at Jonathan Dickinson State Park. So they got right up close to fire being put onto the coastal scrub hills. So that segment is epic. And of course, then we end our last night was camping, which we got special permission. They do not have campsites, but our wonderful friends at MacArthur Beach State Park. And then we paddled on the last day from there down to Peanut Island, which is where we ended, which everyone knows about.
Yeah. That's incredible. I've seen like clips and snippets, but I need to go watch the whole thing. So I can do that on the website.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. PBCIRM.com or HiddenWildFilm.com. Yep. HiddenWildFilm.com is the landing page. You can see how it did on the film festival circuit there. You can watch the film. And if you're a teacher or if you're a parent, you know, with kids and their science teacher isn't using it, all the curriculum is right there on the website. So HiddenWildFilm.com.
That's powerful. You get to also see like what were some of the impressions when that film was released.
I mean, the feedback from teachers and from students has been incredible because, I mean, I think we were successful in creating that authentic connection. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids that we recruited, we intentionally didn't want like Eagle Scouts.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
We wanted kids that were adventure ready, but like eco novices, because we wanted that light bulb to go off on film. And that really did. And then when kids are seeing their peers on the screen, it creates that enhanced connection. You know, it's not, you know, some old person like myself trying to educate.
Talk right? at you.
They are learning through adventure. Yeah. And so kids can put themselves there.
I love that. So another thing I want to talk to you about is the event, which I know there's many, but one of which that I've been involved in with you, which is always an honor for me. So you host an annual Night for the Natural Areas.
Yes.
And that's a fundraising event for the natural areas, for the management, for, you know, all the things that you and your team work on. Tell us about that and what that looks like. You pull together artists. It's with a local brewery.
Right. So Night for the Natural Areas, it started the first year that Twisted Trunk Brewing opened in 2015. And at that point, our Natural Areas program was really running short on funding because of some decisions that were made back in the recession, that funding for perpetual management was really drying up. And we knew that we always were going to have support from Audubon and the Sierra Club and all those wonderful organizations. But we knew we needed new constituents. We needed to create connections with other folks for our natural areas. And, you know, the craft brewing community is really like an outdoorsy community. It's full of like mountain bikers and runners and like, you know, what's better than going for a hike and then going to a local brewery. And so I had known Fran, who owns Twisted Trunk, and he's the master brewer there for several years. And I just approached him and I said, what do you think about brewing a special release beer? And we'll bring in artists and we'll donate artwork. And the whole goal there was to raise money for outreach because outreach is perennially underfunded. Mm-hmm. You know, governments, nonprofits, they usually, you know, when people are donating money or tax dollars are being spent, usually it is they want to see tangible results. They want to see land purchased. They want to see, you know, work on the ground being done, you know, dirt moving. And so the outreach is really tough to get funded. And so that's what this event was about, was creating awareness of these wild spaces that are right next to our homes, but also raising some money so that we can do things like our Adventure Awaits series, which is a free event series that we lead throughout the year. It's biologist led. It also is the major funding source for us to put on our Natural Areas Festival in the spring in February. The really cool thing about that festival is it's so grassroots. And so all of the exhibitors are education focused, and it's really interactive. We lead guided hikes. We lead guided paddle tours in Winding Waters Natural Area with all the birds and the alligators. Alligators.
Yeah.
And you're perfectly safe. I lead the tours.
I'm into it. I don't mind an alligator.
Yeah. And like we said, that is a place where you can see fire be put on the ground and also meet some of the creatures from those bottom lands and those swamps that most folks just don't even know exist.
Is there one in particular that you get really hyped about seeing?
I love the giant salamanders. So there's two species. The one on Hidden Wild we talked about. There's another one called the greater siren. And the greater siren, so these
beautiful
animals,
singing voice, I'm imagining. Like,
you know, what's hilarious is amphiumas, they sing at night.
Where would you get that name if you're not singing?
Right. And so sirens as well, they'll make these noises at night. But they're really cool. The two-toed amphiumas have what's called vestigial legs. So they're almost non-existent.
Okay.
They're little two toes on
the front.
They're
there, but they're not
the
doing much.
Right.
Yeah.
The sirens, they have this beautiful modeling of black and brown on their side. And they don't have rear legs, but they have two little front legs and they're very small. They have four toes and their nails are black. So they look like they have like little black painted fingernails. And when you hold them in
goths.
The hand, and you can feel those little nails kind of scratching your hand. These animals are so cool. Native Americans were connected to these animals intimately for thousands of years. We find them in our archaeological work, their bones, so they were a major food source. And right now, I mean, a fraction of the 22 million people that live in Florida even know these things exist. And, you know, our scientist friends that study the Everglades in these wetland systems, they average population of these animals is like one per square meter. So they're everywhere.
Wow.
And they're like superheroes. So when swamps dry out, we get droughts. These are amphibians. They need to stay moist. Mm-hmm. And if their swamp dries out, they burrow themselves in the mud. They're really slimy. And so they can create their own slime cocoon, and they go into this trance state. It's called estivation.
Oh, wow.
They can stay dormant for up to 5 years waiting for the water to return in their little slime cocoon.
Wow.
So these are animals that like allow us to tell these amazing stories about these misunderstood places. I mean, the swamps are pure magic, and the sirens and the amphiumas are a really easy way to, you know, highlight that magic for people.
Oh man, I don't know about the slime part, but the idea of being in a cocoon and just, you know, like, I'm just gonna chill here for a couple of years until it's all good for me to come back out.
Taking a little mud bath, you know, a little spa
That's
treatment.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So some of the other places that, you know, you're monitoring, what's the scope? Where are you going in Palm Beach County? Like parks, public lands, or, you know, what kind of areas
So Environmental Resources Management, ERM, our natural areas span everywhere from the beach all the way out to the Everglades. We are the Everglades here. We're the Northern Everglades. And so every habitat in between could be found on our natural areas. They're as small as 3-acre natural areas in Tequesta to an almost 12,000-acre natural area, Loxachi Slough and Gardens. Even a natural area that's over 200 acres in size in the middle of Boca Raton. So they're everywhere in the county, preserving endangered coastal scrub habitats, where there are all these plants and animals that are adapted to deal with like no water. They're like our little desert microclimates in Florida.
Yeah.
All the way down to the forests and the flatlands and those marshes and prairies where you get those epic sunsets like at Pine Glades Natural Area.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. And then our ERM also, we restore habitat in Lake Worth Lagoon.
Right.
So we build mangrove islands and seagrass habitat for manatees and sea turtles and oyster reefs for
so
fish
amazing
habitat.
To see like the power of mangroves and what they actually do, not just for their immediate community of, you know, of animals that live in them, but for us too, and the protection of land and erosion. And I mean, it's incredible to see what mangroves do.
Oh, they are the superheroes of the estuary habitat. And you're right. And that is becoming so much more important as we, you know, experience these different weather trends and more severe weather and wave impacts. And so we're working heavily in Lake Worth Lagoon to create not just islands, but living shorelines.
Mm-hmm.
And the community, you know, the business community and the private community is really starting to understand that these projects can be beneficial for everyone, because it's not just about the birds and the bunnies. Putting in a living shoreline of mangroves is going to increase the lifespan of the infrastructure behind it, the seawalls, by decades and decades. And so, you know, doing this and getting this connection back to wild Florida is really going to help us move forward in a more sustainable way.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait, because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
The holidays can be a festive time, but for many of us, they can be extremely stressful. That's why it's important to strategize and practice some simple self-care habits to keep yourself physically and mentally healthy. For example, maintaining a healthy sleep schedule, getting regular exercise, and avoiding excessive alcohol and sugar are all great habits to start with. It can also be easy to get overscheduled and overwhelmed. Remember, it's okay to say no to things that may stop you from sticking to your own healthy habits. Also, the new year is a great time to make sure you're up to date with your preventive care and annual medical exams. Overall, practicing these simple healthy habits will offer you a framework for a balanced holiday season. Happy holidays.
This Medical Minute is brought to you by Tampa General Hospital and USF Health Morsani College of Medicine at the University of South Florida. Learn more at tgh.org/the Palm Beaches.
So part of the way that you connect is you've led eco tours, right? You've done like paddle tours through MacArthur State Park. Is that something that you still do actively regularly?
Yeah. So, so MacArthur Beach State Park, they're wonderful friends of ours. And, we do like virtual live field trips there, and we do some TV work there. But the bulk of the experiences that I lead are through our Adventure Awaits adventure program.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm leading in a week and a half a photography tour through the marshes and the swamps in Pine Glades Natural Area. So folks can come and learn, you know, how to photograph these landscapes and also just be introduced to these habitats. And then I also do paddle tours as well. I've got one of those in 2.5 weeks. So all the attendees will be on kayaks, and I'll be leading on a paddleboard. And again, paddling out west in the marshes. But Adventure Awaits it has something for everybody. We just had a yoga event down at Yamato Scrub in Boca, so yoga in our natural areas. We have other biologists that lead trail running events, wildflower events, events where you can learn how to identify insects and birds. So there's really something for everybody through Adventure Awaits. We do it year-round. Every season we release a schedule. There's somewhere between 12 and I think for the fall we had over 20 events, and they're all free.
And this is for all ages, various ages?
Yeah, so you can kind of read a description and see, you know, we do have some that are geared towards kids or younger folks. And then, you know, so there's everything from just little bite-sized nature adventures to really kind of, on my photo tours, I say, we're going to go at least 2 miles, and you're probably going to be over your knees in the water.
Yeah.
So get ready. So, yeah.
Are people wearing, the waders at that point, or are you just getting soggy?
No, totally. I don't like boots or waders because inevitably I end up topping them, and then you got...
And then you're filled with water.
So it's pants and old sneakers.
Okay.
That's the best thing for the wildlands in Florida.
So I definitely want to talk about more of, I know what you love out in the swamp. As far as it goes with your personal inspirations behind your photography, let's talk about that a little bit. There's some photography that you brought with you today, actually, which I would love for you to tell me about.
Yes.
It's a really cool shot of the swallowtail kites.
Yes.
Roosting, but I'm going to let you tell me more about it.
Yeah, so the first shot I have is kind of a setup for the second. And so you asked me, you know, what are those shots that kind of stick out in your mind?
Yeah, those moments that have really...
Because that's what, you know, photography and storytelling is about. It's right, capturing those moments. And I'm often like, I'm so jealous because you get to take these moments and experiences and put them together in your mind and then transfer it to canvas. And, you know, for photographers, we're chasing that one moment. So the image that we have behind us is of a swallow-tailed kite roost, and it is deep in the swamps of our county natural areas. So the swallow-tailed kite, to set this up, this is a bird that in the last 70 years has lost 80% of its native range. These birds used to breed all the way up the Mississippi River, but now they are just in Florida and the Gulf states and up into South Carolina and a little into North Carolina. And so these birds migrate down to Brazil every year, about the same latitude south of the equator as we are north. And then they start to show up about late February. And these birds have 5 months, only 5 months to see if their mate made it back. They're monogamous, they'll mate for life. And so they go back to the same nesting spot. And if they meet their mate, they'll rehabilitate their nest from last year or build a new one. They've got to lay eggs, incubate those eggs, hatch out those chicks, and then they've got to get those chicks strong enough in 3 months to fly 5,000 miles. And the really amazing part is these are incredibly social raptors. And so they nest in these neighborhoods, 3 to 5 pairs at a time. But before they migrate south, they gather throughout the state in these pre-migration roosts. And the largest one is a little bit west of Lake Okeechobee, over 2,000 birds. Woo. So like 20% of the population of these kites is in this one place. Yeah. And they'll go out and forage during the day and they come back to the same spot at night. And we have one of those on our county's natural areas. This year we had over 800 birds.
Wow.
And so it's a treat every year to get out and see and monitor these birds. Our staff works with the Palm Beach Zoo to count these birds so that we have population data over time.
Yeah.
And so the shot behind me is of the cypress forest, the tops of these trees with, oh, I don't know, probably 75 or 100 birds that are in the air. Yeah. So they got scared off by a snail kite,
okay,
that was flying over them. And so they all kind of lifted up, and that's the shot, is all of these birds in the air. They're striking, they're black and white. And then the shot behind that, do you want me to switch it?
Yeah, can you switch it? Yeah, that'd be perfect. These are birds that I always get excited to see. They never get, it's never old seeing them flying around. You know, they're soaring. Like you said, they're such a distinctive look, such a clear, sharp, like.
They're so graceful.
Yeah,
they're like ballerinas in the air. They're almost never flapping their wings.
Right.
They're so aerodynamic.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen one.
Deeply forked tail. They're just gliding.
Yeah.
They're gliding. They look like gliders that we use. And that's really how they're designed. Efficient flight. And they do almost everything on the wing. They take their prey items, tree frogs and snakes and lizards, off of the tops of trees. They eat them in the air. And then they go down and they drag their talons in the water to clean them off. And they drink by gliding across the surface of the water, right? And so they do everything on the wing. They really are in trouble if they land on the ground because they have these tiny little feet and tiny little talons. So imagine an airplane, right? When they take off, they put their wheels in for aerodynamics. And so these birds have these tiny little feet. So they just land on branches. And they're really not graceful when they land. So the photo that I'm showing now is one of these moments. And bird photographers, this is like one of those epic times. And what the shot is a swallow-tailed kite coming directly at the camera. And so it's this vantage point that you almost never get with birds flying straight towards the camera.
It's incredibly striking.
And not only that, but like when that bird is flying close to you, you're trying to keep focus as that focal plane is changing.
It's changing rapidly.
Rapidly, right? And so this was a bird that went down, got a drink, came up, banked, and just happened to fly straight towards me. And there's the moment, is the frontal shot of what I'm sure those lizards and tree frogs are seeing.
Yeah, right?
When this bird is, or when those chicks in the nest are chirping and saying, come on, bring me back food. But yeah, just to see the bird from that vantage, those long dramatic wings splayed out. I mean, this is a bird that can fit in your hand. It's like a bouquet of flowers, but its wings are 4 feet wide. And so, to see that bird in that moment, and get a frame that's
basically that has to be in focus. Super exciting as a photographer when you're able to actually like look back and see what you got to capture.
And a bunch of my friends, you know, they say they call this the marshmallow photo because the head looks like like a little marshmallow, kind of with wings sticking out from either side. Yeah.
Love it. So when you're monitoring their nesting activity, their roosting activity, is this an area that they've been in for a while? Is this new to them? Do you see that? Do they move around the county, or are they always coming back to this regular spot for them now?
Yeah. So these birds, like a lot of birds, they will have, it's called site fidelity. Mm-hmm. So if they found an area that they've been successful at nesting, they'll come back 100%. We were talking a little bit before, one of their main predators is the great horned owl. So if some birds in a neighborhood have had issues with an owl the year before, they're not likely to come back there. The roost sites are actually pretty sensitive to disturbance. And we are fairly sure that our roost was a relocation of a roost that was up in the Melbourne area.
Okay.
And it was known there. It was on a lake with boat access.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, in the late aughts, really unethical, two unethical photography tour operators popped up. One was flying a helicopter. The other one was using airboats.
Both very loud, very disturbing methods of and getting they
would,
close to
birds. And so they would actually intentionally buzz the roost to get these birds to lift.
Yeah.
Just like that shot, though. Right. That shot was another bird that lifted them up. But they would go and they'd buzz the roost again and again, get these birds to lift so photographers could get the shot. And that roost abandoned. And about 2 years later, ours showed up. And it started with about 250 birds.
Oh my gosh, and you're at like 800
and
some?
We're over 800 now, yes.
That's incredible.
So yeah.
And they're out in the country now. They're not next to any like public access.
So I mean, they've
found some solitude out there.
They're deep in the swamps of our natural areas. And so, you know, but we do monitor them because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we steward these places and make sure it's a good place for them to come back.
I love it. So besides the expeditions that people get to go on, which is part art, part educational. Actually, we met through one of your speaking engagements. That's how I initially got introduced to you and your work, was when you spoke at Creative Mornings,
yes,
right? Which is great. I love them. They're a worldwide organization. They have local chapters. They bring in speakers of kind of all creative realms, and they get to discuss what they do. So you were one of them, and you had brought in, you know, some of your images and were telling your story. Is that a part of what you do as well, still speaking engagements with other like cultural institutions? I know you've worked with Ann Norton Sculpture Garden, with like Manatee Lagoon.
Yeah.
Those kind of entities. What kind of a lecture series are you doing or are you working on?
Yeah. So the one I've been doing for the past, I did it first for Creative Mornings, and it was called A Love Letter to the Palm Beaches. And that's the one I did at Ann Norton Sculpture Gardens. My talks, you know, we have biologists that will come and give hardcore science talks, but I like, again, to use my photography for storytelling. So they're more like TED style, about 20 minutes, about 100 photos. And it's just me telling a story. And so this year, I will be at Ann Norton Sculpture Garden for their Conservation Conversation series again in January. And I'll be presenting with my friend, Mark Cook.
Nice.
For my part of the presentation, it is going to be, you know, nature's report card on how we're doing with Loxachi Slough. And Loxachi Slough is our largest natural area. But this is a natural area that is pure magic.
Mm-hmm.
It is home to swallow-tailed kites. It is home to Everglades snail kites. It is home to incredible cultural resources, but also to wading birds that are nesting and reproducing there. And these are bird species where their nesting effort has declined 95% in the Everglades down south. And so to have these birds reproducing on our natural areas is so special. And so, yeah, this conservation series at Ann Norton Sculpture Gardens is really cool. We'll be there in January talking about the report card that the birds are giving us on how we're doing restoring our land.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous venue too. If people haven't been,
unbelievable.
That's such a, I don't know if I could call it a hidden gem, but it surprises me how many people still don't know about it or haven't been there.
Yes, and it's such an intimate space, you know, such a great space to have
and they make these their conversations. They make their garden like pollinator friendly, right? Absolutely. They don't use pesticides, right. Things like that. So yes. They're specifically trying to be a little oasis for pollinators and birds that are in that, you know, area very close to downtown West Palm. And
yeah. Absolutely. CJ McCartney is one of my friends. I work with her and she works at Ann Norton Sculpture Garden and kind of is a mastermind behind their pollinator garden.
Yeah.
So she has planted all of these essential species, a lot of them endangered and listed in this native pollinator garden. And you can go there pretty much at any time of year, but especially in the summer and the spring months and just be consumed with butterflies flying around. It is so special. And yeah, the conservation conversations, this is the second year for it. The really cool thing about this year is they're bringing in conservation partners for each month. So a different nonprofit is going to be there each month. They're going to highlight organizations like Audubon, which does bird conservation, Florida Wildlife Federation, the Nature Conservancy. And so there's going to be like this call to action where you can hopefully get inspired to connect. And then you can connect with organizations that are doing the work every day.
Mm, love that. Yeah. That's wonderful. And those are the places where people get to learn about your stewardship work, but how they can get involved in it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you want to have a sense of place, you know, connection to the land is so important. And we've lost so much of that. We were just taking teachers on Tuesday of this week on a paddle down the wild and scenic Loxahatchee River. And what we talked about is that connection that we lost, right, over the last 200 years. Before the Industrial Revolution and air conditioning and things that made Florida really comfortable, you had to be connected to the land because you relied on the land to survive. And so I think if we can recreate that connection, that's going to make it easier for us to make those little decisions every day that are going to make a lot more sustainable future going forward.
What are some of the obstacles that you face in the work that you're doing?
Fear is a big one, you know, fear and just a lack of understanding of the real Florida, of where you live, you know, I mean, it's no secret. We have over 1,000 people moving into our state every single day.
Big numbers. Yeah.
And most of those people moving into the state, what do they think about Florida? They think about that rodent with big ears in the middle of the state, right? Golf courses and beaches, right?
Beach, yeah.
And that's it. Right. But really Florida is wild. You know, my wife and I, we travel, we were just in Yellowstone and Teton. And like when I hit landscapes that have grizzly bears and wolves, that is what gets my blood pumping. It's like, man, we're wild now.
Yeah.
And what so many people don't realize when they come to the Palm Beaches is when you dip your toes in that water, I mean, you are entering the Serengeti, you know, whether you know it or not. And so, you know, just the diversity of sharks and manta rays and, you know, manatees and sea turtles that occupy our blue water. And then you go up river and then you get into the alligators and the river otters and those giant salamanders, yeah. Right? And so, you know, this place is so, so wild. And that creates a lot of fear. But the way that we can break down fear is to learn and to understand these animals. And so I always tell people when I bring them out, I bring kids out into the swamp and I feel totally comfortable because I know about the animals that live there. You can play the numbers game and you can be like, oh, well, you know, more people get hit in the head with coconuts and die than, you know, get attacked by sharks, which is true, right? But if you also know about shark behavior, you know that if it's really murky water and you're in the middle of the, you know, black tip
migration season,
it's probably not a great idea to sit there and splash around in the water, right? And the same thing goes with alligators and all of these other things. You know, these things, you know, we are just not on the menu for them. And so it's really important when you understand that, then you're not just playing the lottery, but you're really mitigating any risk. I mean, we are at so much greater risk every time we get into our cars than we are exploring wild Florida. And so it's being able to introduce people to these spaces, break down that fear barrier, and then all of a sudden that's the invitation for that light bulb to go off. And that's where the connection happens.
Yeah. Is there an age group that when you take out on the tours, on talks, that you're particularly excited to work with? Like, maybe is it older people? Is it younger people?
Yeah, we make that connection with everybody. I love getting, you know, folks that just moved here to retire and are terrified, but just, you know, want to learn more.
But curious enough.
Yeah. I mean, that is great. But I tell you, it's that late middle school. You know, that is when those interests are really forming, where you can set kids up for a lifelong connection. Doesn't mean that they have to go into the sciences as a career path. Mm-hmm. You know, they might go into the arts. They might go into business. But as long as there's a connection to the land, I know that we're going to be in a better spot in the future. And so those are those interactions that I really like, is that late middle school, early high school, little before they're too cool for everybody, right?
Yeah.
And that curiosity is really there.
So exciting. I know that this is also, or can be, intense work. A lot can happen quickly, I think, in your field. Is there, a way that you unwind in nature now that is separate of actual work?
So, right. Well, I mean, when I'm leading tours, I am so lucky to do what I do. Okay, so I want to preface it with that. But when you're out there and you're leading a tour, or you're doing an on-camera segment for a show, you're trying to get everything right. You're trying to be inspiring, mm-hmm. and you have to be on, right? Like, you have to go. Mm-hmm. And that is tiring. So it's funny that, you know, those spaces where I work and try to inspire connections are also my refuge to unwind from that. You know, we're sharing stories from our vacation this year, and that was out into the Rocky Mountains. But later on today, I'm going to go home and go for a bike ride around our neighborhood and sit on the banks of the Indian River Lagoon and look for porpoises and otters and manatees, and take the dogs for a walk. I might go to Jonathan Dickinson State Park and just stroll through the Flatwoods, no camera in hand, just me and Chris, my wife, and the dogs, and the breeze through the pine trees.
Yeah. Yep. That's the way to do it.
You got it.
That's the way to do it. So is there a spot, I always ask this question, I'm going to ask it a little different version for you. Is there a natural area when you're talking with people who live here full-time, part-time, visiting here in Palm Beach County, where is one spot that you wish everybody would go experience?
So I send everybody to the same spot, because it's like, if you're teaching a kid how to fish, you're not going to take him out and try to catch a sailfish or a swordfish, because it might strike out, and then that's just going to be terrible, right? So you want him to go catch little guppies one after the other.
Yeah, we like an achievable goal to start.
That is the sunset mecca in Palm Beach County's natural area system, and that is Pine Glades Natural Area. So if you get a chance, and don't be scared of weather. You know, if you get these storms, that's when some of the most magic happens, is when those storms clear and the sun sets and the sun peeks through, and that's where you get this explosion of color. I had somebody on one of my first photography tours say, "Are you inspired by Florida landscapes?" Because they weren't. They said everything's flat. And it's, I know, right? I know. But what they're used to is like these places like, you know, Artist Point, where you just stand somewhere and the landscape stands up in front of you.
Yeah.
The storm clouds are our mountains.
Absolutely.
Right?
Clouds are Florida mountains.
100%. And so go to Pine Glades Natural Area about an hour and a half before sunset. Go about a half a mile south on the Quail Trail. It's a high, dry trail. You're never going to get your feet wet. And you can sit there and watch the sunset over the marsh with this expansive vista. You can watch the colors change. You will have 300 to 500 wading birds coming in to roost over your head. And you will probably see an alligator or two from the very safe vantage point of up on the high, dry trail. And that is the introduction to wild Florida that everybody needs.
Yeah, that sounds like a great one. I'm definitely going to need to revisit soon. I mean, just the birds alone. You've seen my artwork. You know how many birds I've painted over the years. They're always going to be a part of where a big portion of my inspiration lies from our natural environment. But yeah, getting out in a landscape like that is just unmatched.
It is. It is. And I would say one other thing, if you're inspired by that, create your own landscape. You know, a big thing that we talk to folks about is using native plants in your yard and creating this little island. So Chris and I have done that in our yard. We live up in Hope Sound, and we have transformed our yard into 95% natives, and we have wildflowers. So we constantly have zebra longwings, the state butterfly, yep, and Gulf fritillaries all over our yard because we have their host plants for the caterpillars. We have live oak trees draped with Spanish moss and air plants all over the place. And that brings in these wintering birds. You know, they're coming down right now. All of these
warblers, starting to see them, yep,
and all these colorful birds. And we have a ruby-throated hummingbird, a male. And he comes back to our yard every winter. And he came back right after Milton blew through.
Oh, wow.
And so I always notice there's these little markers that mark the seasons for us. Yep. And our hummingbird is back.
Yep. We've just started to see hummingbirds again. We just started to see the painted buntings again.
Yes.
Which are always an exciting one for us. You know, so the males are so colorful, but they're just...
The females are so striking.
Yeah, the green of them and that. Yeah, they're beautiful. What else did I want to get into with you? The experiences we talked about. Was there anything particularly funny that's ever happened on one of your tours that stood out to you?
Oh man, funny. I don't know, like tours, work. The assignments are really, when you're trying the hardest, right? Like, I think my best photos come from just organically being out with the camera. Mm-hmm. But when you're on assignment, you've got to get it done. And so I think, you know, two times, and they're both falls, you know, of course, but you're chasing birds.
Yeah.
And one, I was working with Max Stone, and we were working on a story for Audubon for the Florida grasshopper sparrow. We were in private ranch land, cow pasture, where these birds nest. And ranch land is so important for Florida wildlife. It's so misunderstood. Public land is really important, but a lot of these species, they rely on ranch land as well. And so we were in this ranch land searching with biologists for the Florida grasshopper sparrow. We had found some. They were trying to misnet them so they could band them and study them. And we're running around, and Mac is shooting. I'm second shooting, and I've got this big bazooka-looking thing that is a flash that's going to throw light out that you need to get some light on the landscape. And we're running from one section to another, and, you know, of course, there's like 4 inches of water on most of the ground, and you're tripping and you're falling into this water in the middle of cow patties and everything else. And then the other one was chasing the endangered red cockaded woodpeckers through Jonathan Dickinson State Park on assignment for them. I was with Mark Cook, and we're trying to get, there were specific shots they wanted. And so we're trying to get these shots, and the red cockaded woodpeckers are like no other woodpecker. They're super social. They live in family groups. So in the morning, one of them fires out of the hole silently, takes a look around for about 20 seconds, make sure it's all good, and starts chattering. And then the rest of them fire out, and then they hang out. They have a chat for like 3 or 4 minutes, and then they move off as a group to go feed. And trying to follow these birds through, they live in these pine forests with palmettos. And so we're trying to, you know, bomb through these swamps and stuff with palmettos at the edge. And of course, once again, trip on a palmetto rhizome trunk and, you know, end up face first in the swamp.
Just the fact that you're also, you know, you're on assignment and you're trying to get something so specific, and nature has none of that agenda in mind.
None at all. None
so
at all.
So trying to chase after these little birds in a very particular environment and get whatever the shot that you need is, that's a tall order to begin with, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. And I think one more from Hidden Wild, because that expedition, working with Day's Edge Productions, they're the production house, they're incredible filmmakers. And again, these are scientists by training and just got into filmmaking and storytelling. They have a new series, season 2 of Human Footprint, coming out on PBS. It's incredible, incredible. I should check it out. But so they were the production house who filmed Hidden Wild. Crazy adventurers. And so my whole team is sitting there and they're running logistics. So they're bringing camp equipment every night. They're changing modes of transportation. They're bringing the kayaks. They're bringing the bikes. They're bringing calories for us. And so, you know, a big thing was peanut butter and jellies. And Cortez is, he's a firecracker of a kid. And he just graduated. He is a U.S. Marine now.
Oh, wow.
Amazing. And so Cortez would make like a 6-layer PB&J. This kid took in like 6,000-8,000 calories a day. And it's like skin and bones. This is crazy. But they had made PB&Js for everybody. But they had forgotten and left them at the campsite when they met up with us. So they're like, oh, crap. So they got to go back and get these PB&Js. And they show back up. And they had had them out on the top of the cooler. And the crows had found the PB&Js.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yes, yes. So the crows, the very smart crows. And so they brought them back, my team, and they were so apologetic. And Nate Dappin, one of the principals at Day's Edge, he said, give me that. I will eat a crow sandwich. No problem. And so, you know, at that point, we were on day 3 of the expedition, and it was just about calories. And so, yeah, Nate mowed down a crow sandwich on the expedition. But, you know, those are the fun things that happen in the woods.
That's not what people usually mean when they say, like, got to eat some crow. But...
That's right. That's right.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like you just constantly have really unique experiences. I mean, how could you not when you're in a landscape that's just growing around you all the time and changing seasonally? I know people don't think of Florida as seasonal, but there's those markers that, you know, that we like to see and you get to engage with. Yeah, so got the natural gem in, wanted to talk about that. Let's talk about, before we wrap this up, some advice for future generations, for people who may be interested in conservation work, in biology, in photography.
Yeah.
Is there a little piece of advice that you might leave for them?
I would say just be curious. You know, I think we've lost a lot of that, again, with the phones, and we think the answers are always there. But there's so much that we have to learn. There's a quote by Dave Wiedenthal, and he's a novelist, a writer, and he also studies birds. And in his most recent book, A World on the Wing, which is a great read, he quotes something and it has stuck with me. And he says, scientists would be a lot better served if we stopped saying we used to think, but now we know, very confidently, right? And we should start saying we used to think, but now we think. And that's what science is about, is it's the pursuit of knowledge. And that pursuit is never ending. And when you go out on a landscape, you know, what I try to tell people when I take them out is the land is talking to you. The land is telling you things. And there are these little dramas going on all over the place. You can take a broad brush look of a landscape and not see anything. But if you look closer, then you see the native pollinators and how they're interacting. And so, you know, there's all of these little dramas if we just look close enough. On the trail, there's footprints. You might not see the animal, but if you know how to identify footprints, all of a sudden you can say, oh, there was an otter here. There was a bobcat here. So that curiosity is so important. Understanding that the land is talking to us and has been for millennia, and we've just kind of forgotten the ability to listen. So regaining that ability. And then the last thing I would say is, gosh, we're so comfortable. We're so comfortable now. When I feel most alive is when I put myself into uncomfortable positions. That really opens things up for me. And that is when I feel most energized, is when I'm on the trail and suddenly there's a rain shower, right? And be prepared for it, but embrace it, you know, embrace that uncomfortability, because that's when we really learn about ourselves.
Yeah, it's when you're also more open to learning about your environment or learning about other people's work and how they achieve what they do out in their field. If you're a little bit uncomfortable, you're, yeah, just a little bit more open to somebody else's expertise, whether that's nature's expertise or a leader in your community, your boss, somebody that you work with, another photographer.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a good place to put yourself in.
It is.
Yeah.
That's when we learn the most about ourselves.
Well, thank you so much for that. I appreciate you being here, for getting excited. Always a pleasure to talk with you about the natural areas. Definitely tell us, how can people connect with you? How can they connect with the programs that you offer? Yeah. Give us a website. Give us a social media. Where can they find you?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, 100%. It's very easy. We are Palm Beach County Environmental Resources Management. We go by PBCERM, so PBCERM. PBCERM.com, PBCERM on Instagram and Facebook. Connect with us there. PBCERM on Eventbrite, if you want to, you know, sign up for our Adventure Await series and come and be guided through Wild Florida. Try to find that connection yourself. So you can find us all over there. You can find me on Instagram as well. It's Benji Stute Photo. And I am always willing to talk with anybody about Wild Florida.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you again so much. And big thank you to our audience, to our viewers, our listeners, everyone tuning in. We appreciate you. Massive thank you to our sponsor, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. Thank you for your support. We'll see you again next time on the Art of Hero podcast.